Okay, today we're going to start a brand new series. It's what we call a discipleship series, which means we have material that accompanies it. You can download that online or get a copy of the material out in the lobby area afterwards. It's called The Fruit of the Spirit, right? And we're going to look at this passage in Galatians, which is a letter written 2,000 years ago or so to the early church in the Galatia area. Okay, so, you know, probably multiple churches. By someone called Paul, who was one of the early leaders in the church. He came after Jesus, but was a follower of Jesus. We're going to be exploring that over the next few weeks. So we're just going to jump right in and look at this passage, which talks about this thing called the fruit of the Spirit. And we're going to read it, first of all, in a pretty modern translation called The Message. It's translated directly from the original language, but it's using very vernacular language, let's say. So let's read it together. I'll read it. You can follow along. My counsel is this: live freely, animated and motivated by God's Spirit. Then you won't feed the compulsions of selfishness. For there is a root of sinful interest in us that is at odds with a free spirit, just as the free spirit is incompatible with selfishness. These two ways of life are antithetical, so that you cannot live at times one way and at times another way according to how you feel on any given day. Why don't you choose to be led by the Spirit and so escape the erratic compulsions of law-dominated existence? It is obvious what kind of life develops out of trying to get your own way all the time. Okay, and there's a list that is sort of the antithesis of the fruit of the Spirit. Here's that list: repetitive, loveless, cheap sex, a stinking accumulation of mental and emotional garbage, frenzied and joyless grabs for happiness, trinket gods, magic show religion, paranoid loneliness, cutthroat competition, all-consuming yet never satisfying wants, a brutal temper, an impotence to love or be loved, divided homes and divided lives, small-minded and lopsided pursuits, the vicious habit of depersonalizing everyone into a rival, uncontrolled and uncontrollable addictions, ugly parodies of community. I could go on. Now, you may be able to relate to some things in that list, right? Hopefully not all of them. I don't know whether anyone is really all that bad, but we can probably relate to multiple issues on that list. This isn't the first time I've warned you, you know. If you use your freedom this way, you will not inherit God's kingdom. But what happens when we live God's way? He brings gifts into our lives, much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. Legalism is helpless in bringing this about. It only gets in the way. Among those who belong to Christ, everything connected with getting our own way and mindlessly responding to what everyone else calls necessities is killed off for good, crucified. Since this is the kind of life we have chosen, the life of the Spirit, let us make sure that we do not just hold to it as an idea in our heads or sentiment in our hearts, but work out its implications in every detail of our lives. That means we will not compare ourselves with each other as if one of us were better and another worse. We have far more interesting things to do with our lives. Each of us is an original. Okay. So there we have Paul laying out this issue in which he talks about the fruit of the Spirit. And really the aim of this series is to do what he's saying there. We want to wrestle and grapple with what does it mean to live God's way? What does it mean to live that kind of life? In another translation, a translation that might be more familiar to many of us, just that section that talks about the fruit is described this way. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. And forbearance means patience. That's how we'll refer to that particular term there. So, though that's a beautiful list, right? That's a beautiful list of qualities that I don't think is probably a huge surprise to us. That's not a shock horror kind of statement, right? We're trying to live that way, let's say, to some degree. Certainly, we all want people to treat us that way. We could probably all agree on that. But at the same time, it may be obvious, but it's a real struggle, right? It's really hard. That isn't necessarily our experience of life, both in terms of how people treat us and how we live ourselves. Our experience is something else. Now, I'm going to show us a quick video clip that I think will illustrate perhaps more of what life can be like for us. Okay, anybody like Fawlty Towers? Anybody watch those? Yeah, so show gives away my age there a little bit. Has anybody ever felt like that? Has anybody had that kind of experience, right? And, there's some degree, I think, to which we can all relate to that. There's this sense of trying to hold it together, right? So in terms of how we project ourselves in public, especially at church probably, we love, joy, peace, and all that. We can keep it going for a while, but then life kind of builds up on us, and there's stuff going on the inside, like fear and anxiety and anger and hatred and insecurity and all those things. Sorry, I'm having to adjust my microphone. And we can hold it in for a while, but eventually it bubbles over into different situations, right? And I think it's really interesting with the inanimate object here. Like, there's Basil Fawlty getting mad at a car. And has anybody ever got mad at an inanimate object before? I have. I mean, what about your computer? Have you ever shouted at your computer or your phone, right? Or at your car? And, I mean, that says a lot, I think, because clearly it's not the car's fault, right? The car is not making decisions. Our computer, I mean, artificial intelligence aside, our computers, our phones are probably not ganging up against us, right? It's not their deficiency in a personal kind of way. It shows that the problem isn't with the car or the phone or the computer. The problem is on the inside of us, right? The problem is us. And the other thing about inanimate objects, I think, we are far more vocal. We're far more unleashed in who we really are with inanimate objects than we are with people, okay? I mean, I have thrown... It wasn't a smartphone, it was the old Palm Pilot. Do you remember Palm Pilot? I remember it crashed on me at a time when I was so frustrated and angry about all kinds of things, and I just threw it against the wall. I've never done that to a person, right? But I felt like doing it, and we kind of, we've probably never beaten our car like that. Maybe some of us have beaten our car or kicked it or something. We may not have done that to a person, but we've kind of thought about it. Have you ever done that, with a work colleague or something like that, or a family member or whatever? And we go through those mental things of what I would do and what I would say and everything. But it just doesn't come out because we have some filters and we have these sort of social mores and that kind of thing that keep us from doing that. But an inanimate object shows it for what it is, right? We kind of unleash it, especially if there's nobody else watching or looking. So I think that's something we can all relate to. We know that this list of qualities, the fruit of the Spirit, is a beautiful thing that we perhaps aspire to. It sounds great, but it's really hard to live that way. It's really difficult. Now, I do know a person, in contrast to Basil Fawlty, I know someone who, in my view, does embody all those qualities. And here they are. There. So this is my dog, Baron. Now, he is faithful, he's loving, he's joyful, he's peaceful, he's good, he's kind, struggles a little bit with patience at times and self-control, but he's working on it. But there's somebody who embodies a lot of those qualities. Now, the only thing is, I would imagine probably that a lot of that is to do with how he's been trained and conditioned, right? We can do that with animals. I mean, there's something beautiful and simple about animals, but our challenge is we have this thing called higher consciousness, right? We have these humongous frontal lobes, and we get to think about things, and it's resulted in us thinking about ourselves in a very self-conscious way. And the beauty of that is that we get to interact with God in an incredible way. We get to interact with the universe in an incredible way. We get to interact with one another in an incredible way. We have this potential to choose love. We have the potential to choose beauty. It gives us this incredible capacity. And yet, at the same time, it creates this potential to be afraid, to be insecure, to think selfishly, like, what if I love the other person unconditionally, I mean, they might get one over me. They might actually take advantage of me. I might not, there may be nobody taking care of me. So we start thinking about ourselves. We begin to move towards that list, that's a dark list, that negative list that Paul's talking about. So somehow, we as we think about these fruits, we've got to find a way to be transformed from the inside out. We've got to find a way to help us make those choices for love and joy and peace rather than for those dark things. And this series is about that. This series is about really a response to Jesus, who says, you know, I can help you live that way. Come to me. I'll help you. I can do this with you. And we'll walk in a different kind of way, and you'll live this different kind of life. And Paul talks about this at the beginning of his letter. We're not going to look at that now, but at the beginning of Galatians, he talks about something we talked a little bit about last week, which is one of the main themes of his writings. And it's this, that he believes passionately that the resurrection of Jesus, the fact that Jesus came back to life, means that there's this resurrected life that we can all live. There's this heavenly life, if you like. There's this perfect life. There's this life that is all about love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, gentleness, patience, self-control, etc., etc. There's that kind of life is possible if we experience the resurrected Christ within us, if we experience the Spirit of God within us. Like we can be created anew, as it were. We can be new creations. We can live that kind of life by experiencing the life of Christ within us, by experiencing the Spirit. And he, throughout his writings, he uses all kinds of different metaphors for what that living that life looks like. He for instance, he talks a lot about the Spirit of God. But if you read in another of his letters, in Ephesians chapter 2, if you read that, he uses all kinds of other words and metaphors to explain that. He talks about love, actually. It's the way of love. As we experience God's love, we live this life he's talking about. As we experience light, so we might think of that in terms of enlightenment, living an enlightened life where we see things and we understand things. Our minds are opened up in a new way. That's all part of it too. Or he talks about wisdom. So there's this sort of wisdom and knowledge and understanding, again, from the inside out, that empowers us to live this different way. So each of those terms might be more appropriate for us, right? We might find we can... that. One of those terms means more to us than the others. Whatever terms we use, we're talking about this divine life, this new dimension. And I would say this right at the outside of this series, that it's virtually, I would say, impossible. And the reason I say virtually is because let's never say never or always, but it's virtually impossible to live this kind of life that Paul's describing without experiencing some kind of new creation within us. If we want to live that kind of life, we need to find a way, as Paul is challenging us, not to follow a whole set of rules and try to match up to it. We need something far more than that. We need to be transformed from the inside out. We need the very Spirit of God within us. So that's what this series is all about. It's really addressing, is it possible to connect to that Spirit of God in the way that Paul is challenging us? If so, how? And we're going to explore that by looking at these qualities each week. Today we're going to kick off with love. We're going to explore it, though, in order that we would find a way to live that way, to practice life that way, to engage with the Spirit of God, to live this richer life. That's what we want to do through this series. So what we're going to do each week is you know, we'll kind of combine a couple of these qualities for 1 week, and we'll take a break to go out and serve people, you know, the first Sunday of November. So there'll be a sort of a little break in the series, but we're just going to work our way through this list and explore it together. And I just want to encourage you, join a group, okay? Because we're going to have discussions in our groups. If you're not part of a group already, there's an opportunity right after the service at the ministry fair to join a group. I'd really encourage you to join a group so you can have discussions and interact around these things. Also, even if you're not able to join a group, grab a copy of that material and work through it either on your own or with somebody else that you know and trust so that there's some kind of interaction that's going on. And my hope is that we'll, as a result of this, all of us will experience something deeper of the reality of God in our lives, something deeper about the divine life, this other dimension of life. Now, let's jump in then and talk a little bit about love, okay? So we're going to start the ball rolling. This love is the first one on the list, right? Love, joy, peace, it begins. So love is the first one. And, you know, again, I don't think it's a surprise to see love first on the list. And love is something we talk about a lot here, right? It's pretty common theme for us. It's something Jesus talked about a lot. In fact, Jesus said in Matthew 22, I mean, when he was asked, you know, what's the most important commandment of all? In other words, you know, kind of like, what's the secret to the universe? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Okay, so he's saying basically, like, love is everything. Love God, love yourself, love others. So, you know, and again, I think if you've been around at Cedar Ridge for a while, we talk about that quite a lot. So no big surprises, but again, hugely challenging, right? Hugely challenging. This term love, the one that Paul uses in that list and the one that Jesus uses here, it's the Greek word agape or agape, spelled A, if we transliterate it, it's A-G-A-P-E. That word is a special word for love. There are other words for love that can be used, you know, for romantic or sexual love, for familial love, you know, love in families. There's all kinds of other words in the Greek language for love. But this one is a special one, and it seems to reflect, you know, if we were trying to encapsulate it in a term, it's unconditional selfless love. Unconditional selfless love. It's the kind of love that's used for God's love for the universe, God's love for humanity. Okay, so God, this is the way that God loves, unconditionally and selflessly. It's the kind of love that Jesus exhibited. It's also the kind of love that Jesus called us to show to one another, show to God, as he's saying here, and to extend to one another, this unconditional, selfless love. So that it's a love that doesn't seek its own. It's a love that isn't after something in return. And that becomes somewhat challenging if we think about all our relationships where we extend love, maybe even where love is quite easy for us. We sure know a bunch of relationships where it's not so easy to extend love, right? But even where we find love quite easy, it's interesting when you think about it how often we're really wanting something in return. We want that love to be reciprocated. We want it to be reciprocated a certain way. And if it doesn't come back to us the way we want it, we actually begin to withdraw, right? We step away. So there's all sorts of conditions and selfishness, obviously, often, rather than selflessness, that we impose on our love. So this is a huge challenge. There's a paradox, I think, in this love. This agape kind of love. And there's several paradoxes, and life is full of paradox. I think spirituality is as much about embracing paradox as it is about understanding anything rationally. The paradox here is, let's just share a couple of them. One is this, that this kind of love sees oneness with the other person. Okay, it sees oneness with us and God. We'll get into that in a moment. But it sees oneness with the other person. It's kind of like, it's the ultimate empathy, if you like, this kind of agape love. And we know that that's important, right? If we're going to love somebody, we should not see ourselves as separate from them. And yet at the same time, as I was just alluding to, our attachments to people can often get in the way of love. Once we start loving people to get something out of them, once we start imposing conditions, it becomes conditional, it becomes that much harder to love somebody. And we experience it the same way when somebody loves us that way. When somebody's like, please love me, please love me, please do this for me, make me feel better, make me, you know, we find ourselves wanting to distance ourselves from that kind of love. It doesn't really feel like pure love. It feels, I don't know how we would describe it, but it doesn't feel healthy, right? So somehow in this agape love is embracing this paradox of being one with somebody, but also letting that person go. Being able to release that person to be who they are in that oneness, rather than dictating or requiring them to behave a certain way. There's another paradox, and that is that if we love, it is an inevitability in our universe, I would say, that we'll suffer, right? It seems that love, the flip side of love is suffering, and perhaps the flip side of that is sacrifice. In other words, this is sacrificial love. Agape is sacrificial love because there's a huge risk in loving that way. Has anybody in this room ever been hurt by somebody they love? Anybody? You've got to put your hand up for that one. Have you ever hurt somebody you love? Once I did. Right. Okay, so of course, when we love somebody, when we love God, when we love ourselves, we take a huge risk because we are opening ourselves up to disappointment. We're opening ourselves up to get taken advantage of, to lose something. Okay, even in our own perceptions, we may not think that way with God. Like God's going to take advantage of us, but God, we may experience being let down by God. Has anybody ever felt let down by God? Of course we have. I mean. That's part of the spiritual journey for us, is working through how do we cope with things not working out the way they're supposed to, and how and God doing what God is supposed to do. So we there's this huge risk in loving. There's a risk of pain. There's a risk of loss. Whenever we love another human being, they could potentially hurt us. They could potentially walk away from us. And everything in us at that point wants to pull away. I'm not going to love. I'm not going to be that vulnerable. I'm not going to open myself up. And we choose a different pathway. And I think what Paul is saying here is that pathway leads to darkness, it leads to despair, it leads to pain and hurt, and we just kind of shrink down and down and down and down. Whereas this other risky pathway that's painful and difficult and involves sacrifice and risk, it opens us up and up and up, and we begin to experience this new creation, this divine life, this new way of living. That's our challenge, I think, when it comes to love. Now, let's look at some other things Paul said about love. Very famous passage in 1 Corinthians 13, where he says this: if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Okay, listen to what love is like. Love is patient. This is agape love again. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Now, in the discussion questions this week, there's an opportunity to explore that a bit more and sort of look at, okay, what is this saying about love, and how have I experienced that love? How can I... what does that look like in my life to live that way? But let me just mention a couple of things here. Firstly, Paul is saying, you can have all these other great attributes. You can give yourself up to the flames. You can sacrifice your life. You can give everything you have to the poor. You can do all these outward actions, but if you don't have love, it's nothing, right? It's nothing. We sort of camp and parade around sometimes all our great attributes, all the great things that we've done. But Paul's saying that's nothing if it's not coming out of love. We can treat other people in sometimes very impersonal ways in order to accomplish great things. Paul's saying how we treat people really matters. What's going on the inside really matters. The other thing is, I don't know whether you noticed this, that list, when he talks about what love is like, It's remarkably similar to that list of fruits, right? When we talk about the fruit of the Spirit, those list, that list of qualities of the fruit. And so it seems like love is perhaps at the beginning of that list, because love reflects the all those other fruits. In other words, if we were to break love down, it would look like joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, self-control, etc. All right, it's think of it like this. It's like white light refracted forms a rainbow, right? It's if we take love and refract it, it forms all those other qualities that we read in the Galatians passage. It's love is a rainbow in that sense. Now, that's about as hippy-dippy as it gets, right? When we say that, and God is the unicorn sort of going across the rainbow. I don't mean it like that, okay? What I mean is there's this something special in this list about love. Now, everything on that list is special, of course, but love seems foundational to this, foundational to it. Now, let's just talk a little bit more about love by jumping into another letter written to the early church, which was written by somebody else completely. It's written by John. He wrote three letters that appear in the Christian scriptures, and you know, we believe they're written by John anyway. It seems to be written by John, the early follower of Jesus, you know, one of his disciples. And in chapters of that first letter, in chapters 4 and 5, he kind of gets into what is this love we're talking about? What is divine love? And rather than read those whole chapters, and again, in the discussion questions, there's an opportunity to read those chapters and then reflect on them. But I'm just going to kind of pinpoint a few things here. We're going to sort of hop around to a few verses to try and get our heads a little around what this love is all about, which I think will help lead us then into an opportunity right here and now today to experience some of God's love. Here's what he says. So this is, you know, early on in that first chapter. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. God is love. So the essence of God is love. Well, what we're exploring here is kind of like it's the most fundamental piece of the fabric of the universe. It's everything. God is love. This agape love we're talking about it's that fundamental. Remember, if you were here a few months ago when we talked about what's God like, and we talked about Trinity and Trinitarian love, and God being love, and out of that love flowing all kinds of creativity. We're getting into that realm of mystery, but also that's the practicality of the application of the mystery of God. It's expressed through love. Let's look at the next one. We love because He first loved us. In other words, the love we're talking about. If we want to love, okay, because we're trying to manifest this fruit of love. If we want to be that way, well, we've already been loved that way. In other words, us being like that flows out of the fact that we are loved. Perhaps what this section here is saying is that it's impossible to love unless you are loved. And so God is the originator, the origin, the source of love. This love that flows out of God being love means that we can receive it and then experience it and then be it and give it away. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. So God is love. God is the source of love. We experience that love, and God is in us, and we are in God. There's this oneness of us in God, right? So the secret to this love, if you like, is experiencing and knowing our oneness with God. God is in us, every single one of us. God is in us, and we are in God. And perhaps what Paul is talking about here is waking up to that reality, the reality of God's love, and experiencing that. I'm just jumping around in several different verses in that chapter 4. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and His love is made complete in us. Okay, so out of that sense of oneness with God flows love for other people, and we're called to love that way. This is how we know that we live in Him and He in us. He has given us of His Spirit. Now this is key for us, I think, because John starts equating now the Spirit of God with love. Love is in us. We are in God. God is in us, and that's love. And the Spirit is in us, and we are in the Spirit. As John begins to talk about these things, it's like love and the Spirit of God. Love and God begin to blend. It's like he's talking about them as though they're the same thing. So when we talk about needing more of the Spirit, when Paul says that, we need more of the Spirit in order to experience and manifest love, joy, peace, etc. What John is saying is we need more of God's love. And Paul says that in other parts. So it's kind of like love is not only the ends, it's the means. It's the source, the means, and the end. It's what we're trying to aim for, but it's where we start. And it's also the mechanism by which we get there. So love is everything. I mean, I think we're hopefully seeing that love is core to all of these qualities of fruit. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands, and his commands are not burdensome. For everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Now, what he's saying here is, in this love, we get to obey God. We obey the commands of God. Not because you better obey my commands, but because we love. It flows. It's not forced. It's not about punishment or avoiding certain consequences. Following the way of God, okay, and we've just clarified that, following the way of God is having love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and gentleness in our lives. Following that way doesn't come out of forced or pressured or guilt-ridden behavior. It comes out of love, right? Love motivates us. It transforms us from within to live that way. It flows out of us. And then finally, let's look at the opposite of that. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. Okay, so the opposite of love is fear. And I think we can relate to that. If we've just talked about agape love being this very vulnerable love, right? This willingness to love despite all the imperfections, despite all the risks, despite all the reasons not to and the reasons to withhold. But fear is the opposite of that. Fear that we're going to get hurt. Fear that we're going to get used. Fear that we're going to get taken advantage of. Fear that we won't be looked after. That my feelings won't be looked after. My resources won't be looked after. I'm not going to have enough of whatever it is. So I withdraw from loving and I conserve and hold and I become selfish and self-oriented and self-protective. And therein lies the problem. Right? Because in that situation, there's never enough. There's never enough to make us feel secure. It doesn't matter how self-deprecating we are or how narcissistic we are, no amount of affirmation from anybody else can transform us. No amount of love from anybody else can transform us if we don't really internally allow ourselves to be loved. And that begins with loving ourselves. Right? If we're latched onto fear, that's going to produce a whole different set of fruit, as Paul talked about in that first reading we had when he talks about the other way, if you like. So we're just unpacking a little bit here. What is love? Because I think it's so easy for us just to say love one another, right? But that's so hard. That's so hard. So we're unpacking a little bit. Again, that section, there's a discussion in the material that you know, encourages you to go a little bit deeper with this. But I want to bring it back around now to, you know, we're going to have communion in a few minutes, and we're going to, as part of communion, we're going to have some other opportunities to experience something of God's love. Because I think the issue here is not, let's all try to understand love better. I mean, we need to do a bit of that. We need to talk about it a bit and kind of get a head around it. And hopefully, that has been somewhat helpful as we've discussed what this love is. But there's another piece to this, which is, how do we experience it? How do we experience it? And coming out of what we've just been reading here, I think we can make a few conclusions that we can then take into some of these experiences we're about to have. Firstly, this. As I mentioned already, love and the Spirit of God, love and God, are the same thing. God is love. And so love is the source of this fruit, this life that we want. Love is the means by which we live it. And it's the end, right? It's the goal. It's what we're aiming at. So it begins with love. If we want to experience this kind of life that Paul is talking about, this resurrected life, this new creation life, if we want to experience that, we need to experience love. It begins with love. In the context of love, we can be really honest, right? If we are fully loved, if we could experience God's agape love, unconditional, selfless love, if we could experience that, that could be the beginning in which we could be ruthlessly but kindly honest with ourselves and open our hearts up to what really needs to change. Because that's probably the first thing, right? When we think of someone like Basil Fawlty, or we think about ourselves and the way we project a sort of a certain image to that's palatable to the world, but what's really going on the inside that spills over occasionally, when we think about that, we try to hide that stuff away. We don't really want to be open about that because that's embarrassing. But in the context of love, we could be that. I mean, if I was absolutely 100% guaranteed that you would love me perfectly, non-judgmentally, unconditionally, I would probably behave a little differently, right? I might be way more honest, way more open. I'm a little reserved on that because I'm not quite sure. You might judge me, right? That's how we live our lives. That's how we are. If we could experience this incredible love of God, that's the beginning to this journey. And not only that, that love is what transforms us. That's the means, right? It's the power. It's the life-changing power. It's love. So it propels us towards these qualities, this kind of life that Paul is calling us to live. So what we're going to do this morning, there's a few opportunities for us to experience some of God's love. We have a station. Let's go over here. There's a station over here. We've got two over here, actually. Am I okay with my microphone to walk over here? Yeah? You can hear me okay? So on this station, we have a reflection with bitterness and sweetness, okay? And, you know, perhaps looking at it like the kind of two ways of approaching life that Paul talked about. We have vinegar in these little cups, and accompanying it is a little piece of paper with a reflection. And with all these reflections, okay, there's going to be three of them, including communion. So two plus communion. I would encourage you, just come over to the stations, grab the materials. So in this case, it's a little cup of vinegar and a cup of honey with a little spoon, and grab the piece of paper, and then go back to your seat and just sort of have some time to reflect, read it, reflect on it. You could do one of these reflections or all of them, right? We're going to have some time here where we'll be playing some background music, which is kind of a moment where we're going to open our hearts up to God's love. This one is about taking a sip of the vinegar and experiencing the discomfort of that bitterness in our mouth. We're kind of tasting bitterness. And we're going to use that sensory taste of bitterness to trace bitterness in our own lives, right? Bitterness towards ourselves. Maybe we feel we've let ourselves down. Maybe we're our own worst enemy. Maybe there's some, you know, we don't really like ourselves. So there's a chance to reflect on that. Maybe bitterness towards other people. Maybe people have treated us badly. And there's bitterness there, and it's kind of just there. And or bitterness towards God. Maybe we feel let down by God, and God's not really up to much. And I've been pretty faithful, but God hasn't followed through, and God hasn't delivered. There was a lot of hands that went up over that one, right? So my hand too. And so we got a chance to get in touch with that bitterness. Most of the time, we try to push bitterness away, right? When it comes up, oh, it shouldn't be like that. Just push it away. I've been hurt, but you know, it's there. And on our own, we cogitate on it and think about it plenty of times. But we're not supposed to go there. Well, this morning we're just going to go there. And the reason we're going to go there is because we're also going to open ourselves up to God's love, right? So we're going to get in touch with that bitterness. But then we're going to taste the honey. And I encourage you, take a lot of it in and just let it fill your mouth and let that sweetness melt away the bitterness. And as you do it, again, this is all written out in the reflection, invite God's love in to accept yourself, to love yourself, to forgive God, to love God, to love and forgive the people that have hurt us. Okay, so there's a reflection there around love. There's a more general reflection here with tomatoes, a close relation to the tomato. And these are from, I better not put that one back. These tomatoes, delicious tomatoes, are from our farm, all right? They're freshly picked, and they're very tasty. And again, pick up a tomato, the piece of paper, and go away and taste it. There's some instructions there about just, you know, reflecting on it, thinking about all the goodness that has gone into this, all the sunshine, the energy from the sunshine that's stored up in this tomato, all the processes that have gone on, the people that have picked it, the people that have watered it, the people that planted it originally. There's such power in this small thing. And then we're going to taste it and ask ourselves, what do we taste like? What's the fruit of our life? And then open our hearts up to God and cry out to God for change, for God to come in and transform us. The other thing we're going to do, I won't put that back, well, I've got to talk. So, you do eat it, by the way. Sorry, yeah, make sure you do eat it. There's an opportunity, by the way, with the honey and vinegar exercise to write down maybe some of the things you need to let go of, maybe some of the bitterness that you need to go of. There's another piece of paper here and some pens. And I want to encourage you on that score. Throughout this series, we're going to have numerous letting go exercises, opportunities to let go. And we're going to take that paper, so that, you know, you just leave that paper in the basket. Whereabouts is the basket, Ruth, is it? Oh, okay, put it back in the basket. Yeah, so tear it up, put it back in the basket. What we're going to do throughout this series is collect pieces of paper like that from different exercises that we're doing, and then we're going to make something beautiful out of it, and we'll sort of reveal that as we go through the series. So that will be sort of a constant theme of letting go. Just want to mention also, though, communion. So we take communion here every week, and I mean, in some respects, and I know I say this a lot, but I think we, to some degree, sterilize communion a little bit. You know, we serve it in these tiny little cups, and there's a little bit of bread. It's not quite. Somebody sent me a photo recently of prepackaged communion. I think we have that. Do we have that photo? Have you ever seen one of those? This was yesterday. A friend sent me. They got prepackaged communion. Well, we haven't gone quite to that stage. But this morning, you know, the communion is this came out of Passover, right? It was came out of the Passover meal where they ate all kinds of things together and had all kinds of experiences. They would taste the bread, taste bitter herbs. You know, they got in touch with bitterness in their because of the slavery that they came out of. You know, the Passover meal is a celebration, really, of coming out of slavery for the Hebrew people. But part of it was tasting something very bitter. Again, we push bitterness away. Just think about this for a moment. What if we encouraged African American people to every week get in touch with the bitterness of slavery? I tell you what we would do. We would say, no, don't go. Let's move on. Let's not go back there. We just got to move on past that, and because it's all different now. But actually, communion or Passover is getting in touch with what really is going on in our lives. What's really going on? The kind of hurts we experience. The kind of bitterness we've experienced, and then looking forward to love, looking forward to that being transformed, looking forward to redemption, looking forward to liberation. That's what Passover is about. And Jesus took this Passover meal and two elements from it, bread and wine, and he said, this is my body, this is my life, this is my power in the bread, in the wine, this is my forgiveness, this is my unconditional love. Take it, receive it, be transformed by it, be liberated by it. So what we're going to do this morning, we can do communion in our traditional ways, come up to the front here, and we have grape juice and some gluten-free crackers, and you can be served that way at the side too. Here, we have some freshly made bread made this morning. I'm going to open that up because it's still warm. And you can break off a big hunk of that bread, go back to your seat with it, and smell it and feel it and taste it. And then we have some real wine here. It's a 2014 Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon, if you're interested. It's not the world's greatest wine, but it's pretty decent wine. And we have some cups where you can pour, they're not pint pots or anything like that, but you can pour a smallish glass. But I would say, you know, pour something out like this, okay? And go and sit with it. And we've got more if you need it. What I mean is we have more if we run out, not if you as an individual. I mean, go at it. I don't, and drink the wine. So this wine is wine, right? So that might not be, some people may not want to go to that station. That's totally okay. But when you drink the wine, it will smell a certain way. You'll feel it as you drink it. It will taste a certain way. Savor it. Savor God's love. Open your heart up to this transforming power of love. Okay, so we've got multiple opportunities. I think I've explained everything at length. I'm going to pray, and then we're just going to play some music over the PA. At some point, we'll just stop that, and then we'll start singing together. But let's open our hearts up to God's love. Lord, we welcome you now. Holy Spirit of God, love divine, come to us in this moment. Break down the walls that keep us from you. Melt our hearts. Fill us with love, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay.